Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Well, this is why the Rockets signed another all-star point guard. Because you never know when it could be an off night for your MVP. James Harden doesn't have many of these, but game two between the Rockets and Timberwolves was not a night in which he was on. He wasn't in a rhythm. It's a good thing they had someone else they could rely on. Harden goes 2 of 18 from the floor, 1 of 10 from beyond the arc. And while he has a few free throws, he just barely gets in a double-figure scoring, has 7 assists. And, you know, big recipient on the other end of those passes happens to be his backcourt mate who rebounded from his own miserable performance in the series opener.
Number 3.
Gibson hits both of his first two free throws of the game, and then Chris Paul sticks a three at the other end. Paul drives, flipped it up into the heavens, the finger roll from his hip, 10 feet in the air, over the rim, like it's suspended animation, and ended up dropping a swish for Chris Paul. What a make. Paul rocks a cradle, shoots for three, got it! Oh. Just toying with Bielitsa. 23 points for Chris Paul. Paul, one-on-one with Bielitsa, crosses him over, dances, drives, gets to the rim, flipped it up and in! Threw it over his shoulder, scored again! I don't even know if he was looking at the rack this time.
Oh my goodness.
Stop the fight, people!
Just try to push the tempo, try to be aggressive. James hit me on the wing early in the game, and I think I passed up a shot, and he was like, shoot it. You know, so getting into the lane, getting a couple easy ones early, I think, helped us. And then defending, you know, when we defend and we get out in transition, we're tough to stop.
Chris Paul ends up with 27 points, 8 assists. And James Harden also said postgame that Chris was really frustrated after the opener, that they talked a few times and that he just encouraged him. You got to get back to shooting, and voila, look what happens. So, yeah, the MVP can hit the bronze out of a barn, and yet Houston Rockets used a big second quarter to pull away and still beat the Timberwolves by 20. But you know what? The Wolves get to go home and play in front of their own fans in Minneapolis, and still, the series hasn't officially begun because the road team hasn't won.
Positive energy has to go to the right way, so there ain't no time for negativity, there ain't no time for frustration, there ain't no time to hang your head down. We gotta move on, truck on to the next game.
I feel like that's something we could all use. Ain't no time for negativity. Ain't no time to hang your head. Just time to go to work. And so, yes, it is a 2-0 Rockets lead, but the Wolves will host game number 3. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Yeah, so the other weird number that I mentioned was 19-0. 19-0 run. 19 consecutive points by the Oklahoma City Thunder in the third quarter against Utah. So the Jazz had led for a good portion of this game two at Chesapeake Energy Arena in OKC. And then, spurred by Russell Westbrook, there is a 19-0 run that put the Thunder in front. They had the pedal to the metal. Except they still had another quarter to play.
Number 2.
Crowder rotates to Ricky. Right side three. Good!
My goodness.
Ricky! There's that. Rubio! Mitchell on a curl. Runs into Adams. Scoops by him with a right hand and scores. Creative scoring from the kid from New York City. Here's Donovan. Playing the second playoff game of his career. He's got 24 points. Goes away from the pick. Kicks to Rubio. Left corner three. Ricky Rubio!
What a
setup. How do you say on fire in Spanish? They get it into Mitchell. Guarded by Paul George. He attacks. The spin. The score from Donovan. Oh, Donovan!
Big time move there, baby.
6-point lead, 1:30 to play.
The fourth quarter belonged to the Utah Jazz. So despite a 19-0 run, they had a brilliant rebound from that. And they were able to outscore the Thunder in their own building 28-16 in the fourth quarter and win game number two to even the series. Donovan Mitchell played with a bruised foot, but had 13 points in the fourth quarter. And get this, in all of NBA history, his 55 points in the first two games of his playoff career are the most ever for a guard in the league. That includes Michael Jordan. In Michael Jordan's first two playoff games of his career, and there were many playoff games in his career, he had 53 points. So Donovan Mitchell, I know that these games do not count for Rookie of the Year voting, but he's not letting that go. 55 points in the first two games for the Utah Jazz. Derek Favors also had career best in both points and rebounds. And Donovan says there's something special about this team.
The biggest thing with us, you know, is there are a lot of teams, you know, who aren't as close as we are. You know, when you, like I said all year, you know, when you hang around guys, you know, you go to movies, you hang out at each other's houses. Like, we watched the championship game for the college basketball, national championship game together. Like, that just says who we are collectively. You know, in practice, we're connected. You know, we're all giving advice to each other on what we see on the floor. And, you know, tonight's just one of those nights where you saw how connected we were.
So Donovan Mitchell and the Utah Jazz get it done in the fourth quarter, but you know what else was happening? A whole lot of bricks put up by the Thunder. Listen to this. The big three for OKC, Paul George, who did not have his alter ego playoff P show up, Paul George, Russ Westbrook, who is the reigning MVP, and Carmelo Anthony, who, of course, can get into rhythm and shoot. Those three guys missed every single shot they took in the fourth quarter. They were 0-14 together as a group. And the trio only managed 2 points on two free throws by Russell Westbrook. It was gross.
I think we missed. I think we all missed. I mean, I don't really have an answer to, you know, what happened or excuse of why we didn't make shots. And we just didn't make shots in that fourth quarter.
I mean, it's as plain as you can get from Carmelo Anthony. We just missed. That's basketball. Sometimes the shots go in and sometimes they do not. So yeah, James Harden can certainly attest to that. 0-14 in the fourth quarter, and the Thunder could only scrape together a handful of points, and they lost the home court advantage as they lost game number two. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. That brings us to the Eastern Conference. And come on, this is not a surprise. No one is surprised that LeBron James came out of the locker room in Cleveland against the Pacers and said, I got this.
Number one.
Korver on the left side feeds Nance, 5 to shoot. Nance off to LeBron, who hammers home a dunk. LeBron spins, fires, scores. Oh boy. LeBron rattles it home. LeBron dribbles between his legs. Once, now twice. Step back long two. Hey, Kansas. LeBron James has given the Cavaliers an 88-78 lead as LeBron now has 40 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists. J.R. Smith lobs to LeBron. 6 on the shot clock. He's 20 feet out right side, guarded by Bogdanovich. LeBron, fadeaway jumper. Got it! Oh, goodness! 42 for LeBron James. 4.5 to go in the fourth quarter. Cavaliers 90, Pacers 82.
He finished with 46 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists. He was 17 of 24 from the field. But more impressive than that, because, I mean, he's done that kind of thing before. More impressive than that is he scored the Cavaliers' first 16 points of the game.
Coach Lou called up the first play for me and went down. So we went back to it. You know, I was able to hit another one, and you know, just felt like I was in a really good rhythm. So just try to see how long I could stay in that zone and just you know, try to make a mark on the game early on, especially after the way we started at game one.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that worked to perfection for LeBron and the Cavaliers. 16 points in the first 5 minutes, 29 at half. Now, despite his incredible performance, this game still went down to the wire. There were not a lot of other guys on the Cavaliers that were putting up big numbers. Kyle Korver was in double figures. He moved into the starting lineup, at least for game number two. But Kevin Love was dealing with an injury. We'll get to that. And so in the end, would you believe Victor Oladipo had a wide open three to tie it? Now, he missed it. He did miss it. But still, this was not a blowout by any stretch of the imagination, despite 46 points for LeBron. Oladipo was in foul trouble early. He ended up with 22, but man, that missed three is going to bug him.
Obviously, we're upset about the loss, but just like the first game was just one game, this is just one game. We felt as though we had a chance to tie it, had a chance to win, and we feel confident going home.
They did at least steal the home court advantage, just like the Utah Jazz did. And so I think we have the potential for some longer series in the NBA. Maybe not in the NHL, though there's only a couple of them have wrapped up. But the NBA, there's a chance we could get a handful of Game 7s. Kind of cool. All right, our play-by-play announcers is part of our basketball countdown. Craig Ackerman of the Houston Rockets, David Locke and Ron Boone of the Utah Jazz, and then John Michael on the Cavaliers Radio Network. Coming up, there's an injury question that the Cavaliers will have to deal with. And I think despite the win, there's a little bit of nervousness, a little anxiety among Cleveland Cavaliers fans about what could happen and the team that could be on the court in game number 3. So we'll give you the latest straight ahead. After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Oladipo over the timeline. He'll step back. He'll fire a three at the buzzer. It's good. It doesn't matter. As the Cavaliers have claimed game 2, your final score, Cavaliers 100, Pacers 97.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
All should be right in the world of the Cavaliers. LeBron James had a dominant performance, 46 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists. I mean, for heaven's sakes, he had the game's first 16 points. The Cavaliers' first 16 points in 5 minutes. I think there may have been a free throw mixed in there for the Indiana Pacers. And yet, there is a question mark moving forward about game number 3. The injury report is brought to you by the Salt Institute. So let's take a look at what could be a critical injury for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Kevin Love jammed his left thumb, which, okay, that happens a lot in basketball. I can't even tell you how many times I've jammed fingers or thumbs playing basketball over the course of my high school and college career. And these guys probably do it every single day. Sometimes their fingers just don't straighten up anymore after they've jammed it so many times. But here's something that's a bit disconcerting. After the game was a report of a partially torn ligament for Kevin Love. That's the kind of thing that could affect a shot, could certainly affect him for the rest of the playoffs if that is the case. So we'll have to keep our eyes out. He also had this moment where, at least for me, it caused me to catch my breath because he was taking a three in the corner, and when he came down, his foot landed on the foot of his defender and rolled awkwardly. And so he ended up falling into, I think it was his own bench. I ended up falling into his own bench and was down for quite a while. And so the camera pans, the Pacers end up going on a fast break. The camera pans then down the other end of the court. And it's like 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi. And there's no Kevin Love. And finally, he comes hobbling into the shot. And so I actually thought that was going to be the injury that people were really worried about. But it turns out that was just something he could walk off after a second. But he did not return in the fourth quarter once he jammed this thumb. And so it was certainly a topic of conversation after the game. We'll let you hear that in a second. But did you ever wonder why EMTs and hospitals usually administer a saline drip to patients? It's because sodium and water are essential to human survival. Everything is better with a little salt. Find out why at alittlesalt.org. So Kevin Love had people scared to death after the game.
Saw the replay too. It didn't look good. Hurt pretty bad. Initially, I told Ty afterward that I could have gone back in, but I think he liked the flow out there, and guys made big plays down the stretch. So, it's not going to feel great tomorrow, but throw some ice on it, tape it up, and be ready to go.
He's good.
Okay. Is he getting an X-ray?
No, he's good. He just a little jammed thumb, a little whatever, but he's fine.
Okay. Then how come he didn't come back in?
Because we had a good flow going.
Okay, so he's okay.
He's great.
Game 2.
Yes, sir. Ready to go. Game 3. Yes, sir.
Awkward.
I feel like they got their story straight, right? Because what Kevin Love said about the flow in the fourth quarter perfectly matched what Ty Lue said about the flow. But yeah, that was a little bit awkward for sure. Because
it's a lie.
The reporter was determined to try to get something else out there.
Okay.
Okay. I know that you know.
Yes, sir.
He's good. Okay.
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 Okay. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. There was another story from the world of basketball that was sobering and that broke during the Cavaliers-Pacers game, and that was the death of Greg Popovich's wife, Erin, at 67 years old. She had been battling a lengthy illness, though I haven't seen yet what that illness was, but she'd been sick for a while and passed away early Wednesday. The Spurs put out the statement in the evening, and then as it started to get picked up and went all over social media, then members of the NBA world were weighing in. In fact, LeBron was asked about it in the seconds after the Cavaliers had wrapped up their game against the Pacers. But in the meantime, there was a ton of reaction on Twitter, of course, on Instagram, and there's a lot of speculation about whether or not Greg Popovich will coach Game 3 of the Spurs Warriors. That's kind of secondary. He did lead practice on Wednesday, but I can't even imagine being in his shoes with all the stress of the postseason and everything that goes into trying to coach your team this time of the year. But you just lost your wife of 40 years. They've been married for 40 years. Clearly, she was a big part of what he did in his career. They met such a long time ago. When he was at the Air Force it was back when he was coaching in the college ranks. I don't want to say something that's wrong. But they were together for a really long time, and they have two daughters and two grandchildren as well. And so that was a story that was far more important to the NBA community than what was happening on the court. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that about these different sports leagues, is that no matter the competition, no matter how fierce it gets or how much they seem like they're at one another's throats, and it's maybe can be nasty or chippy or have this edge to it, when something like this happens, we saw it with hockey and Humboldt, when something like this happens, a tragedy this big picture life perspective slams you in the face. Like, hey, this is just basketball. It's just wins and losses. And yeah, sometimes we get consumed by it, but it's not as important as life and death. It's always good to see these families come together and support one another. And again, like I said, this was one of the most important things that everybody was talking about after the games.
Really upset to hear about the passing of his wife. And, you know, my thoughts and prayers are with him and his family. And I just wanted to say that before started about the game, because I was really moved by it when I found the news out after the game was over with, and I really feel bad for him and his family, and my prayers and thoughts are with them.
This game is a beautiful game. It brings people together. It you build friendships over, you know, from playing the game, and you get so much support from so many people that, you know, you would have never crossed paths with if it wasn't for basketball. And just want Pop to know that the whole NBA family is supporting him and, you know, got his back through it all. It's bigger than the game. It's bigger than winning or losing. It's about the brotherhood that we've built as NBA players, everybody in the NBA family.
First, Billy Donovan didn't even want to talk about his team's loss until he had a chance to speak about Erin Popovich. And then Kevin Durant after that, who was at practice with the Warriors when he found out, and had a microphone and a camera in front of his face when he was finding out and trying to process that news. So that's obviously much bigger than the basketball. I can't even imagine. Trying to think about coaching. Greg Popovich is he's a different breed. If anybody can do it, he's the one who can do it. All right, coming up, it's another annoying story about the New England Patriots. I feel like it's gone over the deep end now. So we'll get to that. Also, this app that I had to download on my phone, it's been used by 100 million people, and I've resisted it to this point, but I need it now. And so I finally caved. Any guesses, Andrew Bogish?
Can I get a hint?
It's not Twitter. It's not Facebook. It's not Snapchat. It's not a social media app.
Not social media.
Not Tinder.
No.
It's, yeah. I mean, I got people.
Farmersonly.com?
It's not social media.
Does that count as social media? Yeah, a dating
those are
app?
Social sites.
Yeah, but they're different because they're like somewhat private. No? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Like, I call them those are called dating sites. They're like a different subset. And no other hints? Is it sports related?
No.
And you said over 100 million people?
Yeah, that's what the app says.
Uber. Radio.com.
Yes, Uber.
Uber.
I have to use it for Chicago because the USGA is paying for my transportation, and they are only doing it through Uber. So they're just, listen to this, they're attaching me or adding me to their Uber account. And so, unfortunately, I prefer to use local cab drivers, but now I have to use Uber, but only for the weekend, and then it's still getting deleted off my phone.
Aren't they still local cab drivers?
Not like, you know, like cab, like registered cab drivers. I mean, I have friends who just, they just Uber, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not, and I've got some other friends who've got horror stories about Uber, and so I'm just not super comfortable with it. Like, you know, the cab drivers, they, or the cabs themselves are marked, they have numbers, they're right. Registered drivers, like, you know, that to me is a little bit safer. So, it's just me.
They're not hooked up to GPS, though.
Yeah, Uber knows where you are at all times. And the driver is a driver. I mean, I don't know if he has, I'm assuming he has certification. He certainly is not a stranger or an unknown. He doesn't say N.A. under his name.
And yet you hear stories about Uber drivers peddling drugs out of the back seats. And you hear about women getting attacked. And
bad things happen in regular cabs, too.
Well, that, not to me,
the
ever.
The key is take a bike. That's really the moral of the story. Just bike everywhere. It's just you and the fresh air and Chicago. It'd be beautiful.
Especially when it's 30-something degrees. That's a great idea. Maybe I'll do that tonight when I'm on my way to 8 and 670 to score. All right, Uber is the app, and now I got to figure out how to use it. Oh, my gosh.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
It's amazing how often a public figure will answer a question, and yet still there is speculation. And now with the New England Patriots, it's taking on a life of its own. Ever since the Seth Wickersham column that came out in early 2018. So going back to January, I'm sure you guys remember, it was talked about over and over. Is this true? Is there really dysfunction with the Patriots? Could this be the reason why the organization finally slows its roll and stops winning and stops being the dominant team in the AFC and stops getting to Super Bowls? And now again, this was in early January, so we didn't know how the postseason would play out, if they would be going to the Super Bowl and obviously battling it out until the end with the Philadelphia Eagles. But it feels like every storyline about the Pats since then has been in some way either an attempt to validate or invalidate the idea that there is a power struggle and that, you know, it's not one big happy family in New England. Which, to be honest, doesn't bother me at all. I'm actually more impressed with what the Patriots have done when you consider that all over pro sports, there are huge egos. All over pro sports, there are people who maybe could demand the credit for what's happening and the success, or athletes who are a little insecure about how things are done, or coaches who are abrasive and who rub their guys the wrong way sometimes. I mean, that's pretty standard in sports. None of that is out of the ordinary. What's out of the ordinary is the continued success of the Patriots year after year. That's the part that doesn't happen. Everything else is pretty standard. So to me, the idea of the dysfunction only underscores how incredible it is that whatever of these reports is true is put aside for the good of the team. Now, in the case of Danny Amendola taking a contract somewhere else and telling his own story, all right, that we know is legit. But sometimes I wonder about these other sources, and I'm not fingering the journalist necessarily. I'm just saying that sometimes I feel like things get twisted and they get used to, like I say, either validate and back up a particular idea or the opposite. Or something gets made out of nothing, which seems to happen a ton these days. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. The latest is that Tom Brady, and I'm not saying this is gospel. I'm just telling you what the report is. And it came from a couple of different places on Wednesday that he hasn't committed to playing in 2018. part of the speculation is because he's not participating in this particular set of off-season workouts, which,
sorry.
I mean, after all these years, I probably wouldn't want to participate in them either. But just, I mean, come on. It's not like he's out of shape. We know he's on a camel and cutter. I mean, he had to go, and he had to go do something spectacular that could be all over social media because Aaron Rodgers befriended the Dalai Lama, and, you know, it's like keeping up with the Joneses when it comes to the quarterbacks. So, yeah, I mean, I don't care if he's in off-season workouts. When was the last time Tom Brady looked out of shape to you? When was the last time Tom Brady couldn't do everything that was asked of him on the football field, whether it's the TB12 method or whether it's with the Patriots training staff? When was the last time Tom Brady looked lumpy and not lean? I mean, come on. This is Tom Brady we're talking about. There's a reason why he's still playing into his 40s, because he's pretty religious about his workouts and because he doesn't take days off. Oh, see, he and Belichick have that in common. So I don't care if and really, that to me applies to most veterans who've been with their teams for an extended period of time or at least have a track record of taking their job seriously. Sometimes guys need off-season workouts. Sometimes it's great for team building. Other times, it's just not necessary. And for the Pats and for Brady, they've continued to play deep into January and deep into the playoffs every year, which means they get less time off than most other NFL players and most other teams. So it doesn't bother me. I mean, Brett Favre, he was notorious about finding reasons to skip off-season workouts and the start of training camp, and it's not the first time for Brady. So that's one piece. But then this idea that there's been no official word from him about whether or not he's going to play in 2018, I mean, I beg to differ. We had an official word from him. It wasn't that long ago. In fact, it was leading into the Super Bowl. You know those conversations he has with Jim Gray? This is public, isn't it?
You just said you're not a finished player. You're still looking at things to get better at.
Yeah.
Does that mean that regardless of the outcome today, we will see you back in uniform playing football again next year?
Yeah, you're going to see me playing football next year.
Okay, maybe it's me. Somebody else want to raise your hand and tell me why that's not definitive? Is this report suggesting he's changed his mind? Because he kind of laughed at the question. This was Super Bowl Sunday. Laughed at the question is like, yeah, you're going to see me playing, or you're going to see me in a uniform next year.
People just really want him not to come back. So it's like the power of negative thinking if we just
but
push this
like
out
media,
there.
But this is like media, though.
I don't understand it.
It's, but I feel like that's the point, is that everything that happens with the Patriots now, whether it's a story or not, it's this idea that, oh, there's dysfunction. The dysfunction's been identified, so we better find some stories that go along with the dysfunction. Oh, look, this must be dysfunctional because he's not showing up for off-season workouts and because he's enjoying a vacation with his wife.
And see, that I can follow, that there's some dysfunction there, but the idea that he's going to not play this year, now all of a sudden you lost me. What are you, what? Why would he not?
I mean, again, is this not definitive enough?
He just won MVP and went to the Super Bowl. He looks like he's 30. He certainly doesn't look old.
Lean, not lumpy. Should we hear it again? Tom Brady, this is the question. Are you going to play football in 2018?
You just said you're not a finished player. You're still looking at things to get better at.
Yeah.
Does that mean that regardless of the outcome today, we will see you back in uniform playing football again next year?
Yeah, you're going to see me playing football next year.
I mean, he kind of scoffed at the question. Like, what a dumb question that is. Although, kindly, he didn't say that. I mean, I think probably he's been asked that question so many times, even then, going into the Super Bowl in Minneapolis, that he was just like, okay, Jim, I'm doing this for you because we're friends and because, you know, we do this every week.
Exactly. And he's had much stronger answers, too, like, I'm going to play till I'm 45 and stuff. So I don't know where this even comes from. Because
I don't either.
Things are not as good as they used to be with him and coach. So
thanks, Coach. Sharon, back to you.
Take his ball and go home.
I mean,
it does not sound like Tom Brady to me.
Whatever.
And I'm a Jet fan. Nobody wants this to be true more than me.
Don't say nobody. Oh, no. You're saying no. I got it. Not a finished sentence. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. It's getting annoying. Oh, Gronk's unhappy. Gronk's not going to play unless Brady plays. I mean, come on, not every story has to be about the dysfunction with the New England Patriots. Again, if this is them dysfunctional, then the rest of the league better watch out if they ever do become functional. This is dysfunctional.
It's more believable to me that Gronk has interests outside of football that he might call his career, you know, to an end earlier than,
sure,
than we might expect. That to, for Brady, that makes no sense to me. This is what this guy eats, breathes, and sleeps. He's told us a million times he wants to play as long as he physically can, and he just came off a devastating loss. This is not the point.
Like, no one says you have to be perfectly happy. I can understand if Gronk's not happy. I mean, he's always got stuff going on. Maybe he does have other interests. He just purchased part of a racehorse. I mean, so what? I can understand that he doesn't want to take passes from anyone else but Tom Brady. Like, that makes sense, too. That's where he's had all this success. But to spin this into constant speculation about the breakup of the New England Patriots is, it's just becoming overkill. But maybe it's me. Maybe everyone else thinks it's awesome. You know, Aaron Rodgers, he wants more clickbait. I mean, he was just saying, Green Bay Packers, we need to have some fake news here so we can get more clicks up.
You got to compete with the Pats.
I was going to say,
they're getting all the clicks.
Aaron Rodgers is upset that the GBP website is not getting nearly as many clicks as the NEP.
Rodgers!
It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio and on Twitter. We're asking you to take this poll about how many QBs you think will be selected in the first 10 picks of the NFL draft. That's another thing that keeps happening is continue to be these stories about which quarterbacks the Patriots are interested in this draft. So we've given you the option, one QB in the first 10 picks, two, three, four, or more. And I feel like it's fascinating if you listen to the conversation I had with Dane Brugler, who's a former CBS colleague, but is now with NFLDraftScout.com. And then you look at his mock draft, and he's a guy that does so much homework. It's like he's giving birth to a baby every time he has this NFL draft guide out. He literally starts the next one, he says, the day after the draft is done. He's incredible. And so he believes that there will be four QBs taken in the first five picks, and that there could be. Now, his mock draft does not include trades. But if you think about the trend, you think about what's already happened with the Jets moving up to number three, and then what happened in last year's draft where we had three teams move up in order to select QBs. You don't generally move up unless you're taking a quarterback. It could easily be five. I could see it being like teams just scrambling, worried about what the other team's going to do. That's exactly what the Chicago Bears did last year. They were so freaked out. They only had two teams in front of them, and they were so freaked out that the San Francisco 49ers might take a quarterback. That's almost ludicrous now, considering what they did do. but they decided they were going to give up a couple of picks just to move up to number two, and they wanted their guy that badly. So there's a lot of fascination with the QBs in this one, because whatever the Browns might do at number one then precipitates all kinds of Plan B, Plan C, Plan D, kind of ripple effects through the course of the rest of the first round and certainly in that top 10. So you can take that poll, again, on Twitter, A-Law Radio. We also put a spot on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Do I owe you anything else? Are we good? Do I owe you something else? I owe you Geico. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. There's a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on your car insurance. I am off to the airport this moment, and I will talk to you from Chicago coming up for our last show of the work week. Thanks so much for joining us. After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.